Hello! Welcome to the Mind Buffs podcast. I am your host, Matt Domwasek, and today we are here for episode number 4 with the one and the only Nick Johnson.
Thanks, Matt. Thank you so much.
really loved our last episode, just being able to kind of talk about our different experiences within competition and like the different parts of ourselves that visit invited or uninvited in the moment. And it really just kind of got me thinking about just kind of hearing some more stories from you about the different teams that you played for, the different cultures, the different ecosystems that were in a lot of those different teams, whether it was because of like the players or the coaches or the organization itself. I was really looking forward to kind of digging a little bit deeper into what some of those different experiences were like and maybe how you were different or places where you felt most comfortable or not. So yeah, kind of looking forward to kind of picking your brain on some of that. So we'll start with like an easy one. What team did you actually feel the most comfortable with that you felt like you could be yourself the most with?
Yeah, that's interesting. I feel like in any year there was always pressures, difficult times, in a way, difficult systems to kind of walk through and manage. I would say, interesting enough, like I feel like Pittsburgh, a lot of it when I was starting out with the minors and then got called up here and there, but more sporadically. But the coach that I think was kind of best for me at the right time, John Hines.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So my time with the Pittsburgh Penguins, it was John Hines kind of came about at a good time for me. It's hard to describe. It's hard to know if they were like winning is the only thing that mattered. I think in general, almost every team culture was about results.
Yeah.
Winning, producing, whatever. But I think I got John Hines at the right time. Hmm. Coming from college, he'd just come from college and he was assistant coach. And I remember we had like, he basically had like a team meeting at some point during the year. And our head coach maybe wasn't the most confident speaker from the group. He had kind of just become head coach because Bylsma got kind of basically called up to Pittsburgh and then Pittsburgh went on to win the cup that year. And so our head coach was like, you know, I liked him as a man for sure. I think some of the things he did were just kind of like not the most useful. But Hines, like there was this time. So Hines was the assistant coach. And basically the head coach kind of gave him the floor to like talk about us as we're kind of getting chewed into because of we hadn't been playing well or whatever. It was like a bad couple of days or games.
Yeah.
And he just like laid out perfectly what was the problem and how like we don't show the head coach enough respect that he was like, we get a ton of respect there. And like, it's just like, right. He just like really hit the nail on the head. And it was like, I think I remember guys talking about after be like, why the hell isn't he our head coach? He was just like, wow, that guy's really on the ball, but he's still really thoughtful. And it really was like task focused. Like it really was more about like, what do we have to do in any situation to kind of increase our percentage for success, basically.
Right.
And his practices became designed like that. So he did become the head coach next year. Mm. And it was just all geared towards that. And just really hit me at the right time as like a really good time for me to grow and grow my team self too. Mm. But I don't know. There was even a time where I felt the pressures of Pittsburgh wanted other kids to play. And then I got injured and I came back and I wasn't on the power play. But even though it was like my third year and whatever, and I deserved to be there. And some of the other younger kids just hadn't figured it out yet.
Right.
But they're being prioritized. Right.
Yeah.
And so that's like, you know, the injustice that really pissed me off, but like, just like chatting with him. And I remember him saying like, "Kid Johnny, like what's on your mind?" kind of thing. Mm. When he said those very words.
Yeah.
And yeah, like after that, yeah, I got more power play time, but it was also like things went way better and I got more looks and I just did better. I helped the team and then I got called up and it was really good. I was in Pittsburgh for the rest of the year, hurt for the most part. But yeah, I don't know. All the teams are basically the same, but a bit different. I feel like with Tippett and Phoenix was a really good fit for me. The lockout just really hurt my chances. And then
It's brutal.
Team wasn't winning. Basically one of the guys at the end of the year is basically like, well, it wasn't fair that the team took it on you by sending you down, but it's like sometimes they're trying to shake things up. So it's like, you know, what do you do with that, right? But I feel like that was the best fit Minnesota was good, but then they kind of had a Pittsburgh attitude too, which I, you know, who am I to say at that point that like it wasn't going to work? But I could see the writing on the wall that Pittsburgh wasn't going to underachieve for a couple of years, and they did underachieve for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And Minnesota, I think, was kind of a clone of that at the time. Mm. Whereas going to Phoenix, being in the West, and it was like kind of a totally new set of people, totally removed group of people that I felt like it was a fresh start. And like, I think Tippett like loved my game and stuff. It's just like, I remember him talking one time, like, you know, I mean, it wasn't the first time I was a healthy scratch. It wasn't like I was like upset. It was just kind of like, this is what it is. Mm-hmm. But he's like, you're being one of our best forwards, but we have a bunch of NHL more established guys. I can't sit Shane Doan and keep in the lineup, you know, like it's not, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
And me and him totally agreed, you know, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you run into that and this is kind of the way it is. And then later in the year, like, I think it was really stupid. They sent me down. I mean, they lost 7 in a row after that and lockout shortened year. You can't make the playoffs when you lose 7 in a row.
No.
Some in overtime, I think, but. So I don't know. Yeah. Like that was maybe the toughest stretch. So I'm down in Portland, which is in Maine when I have a lot of family out there. So that was like, I'm really glad I had that. Mm. But I remember thinking like start of the year being really upbeat, just a full-time season in Minnesota and then Phoenix, like I get called up and I do really well. And I'm like a good third, fourth liner with like Bissonnette and Chipchura and those guys. Thought I was a really positive help for the team. Like it wasn't the reason we were winning or like not losing, but feel like third, fourth line, I was like a pretty valuable piece.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, feeling like just churned out and spat out and sent down for prospects who weren't really ready and whatever, it was what it was. But I remember like, so we lost in Portland to Syracuse, which was Tampa's farm team, when they had a bunch of the kids that ended up going up to Tampa and being a big part of those teams.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember like the day after you kind of go in for meetings and whatever, like year end exit meetings.
Yeah.
And yeah, the meeting, there was lots of, they were like, you know, we want to say it's fair for everyone, but clearly it wasn't really fair for you, but whatever you do. But I remember just like getting home from, I don't know what part of the day or right after we lost or whatever, but it was kind of like a feeling of like dread. It was like emptiness and kind of like despair. I remember being like, at the start of this year, like I feel like my career was going up. And it's like now I just realized like over the last like couple months and then finally losing out and Phoenix wasn't making the playoffs. So it's not like I could get called up again.
Right.
It was like my career is 100% on the downhill. And I was like, instead of going up the mountain, I'm like most of the way down the other side.
Man.
And then so whatever, like you deal with that. But then summer went well and stuff like that. And then you go to Boston and there's like, okay, I'm told there's a spot available. And then I go to Perry Pern's this summer and was talking to Johnny Boychuk, who is, you know, a big part of their team before. And he's like, yeah, they're actually really good about like, you know, keeping a spot open and having some competition and stuff like that. And so like, I was like, okay, even though I know they already have a team of guys who have a one way and there's not really a spot, like
assistant
GM said, there was like going to be a competition actually. So I put all that out of my mind. I didn't even think about the minors. I was just like, I'm going to go kill it.
Yeah.
And I did. And then they sent me down anyways. So I was like, that's kind of one of my regrets is like, why didn't I just go to Russia then? Or like not, I think the minors just kind of made me worse for a year. But it's like, once you go over to Europe and you're not super young, then it's basically like NHL's no longer possible. So
well, you're also not a robot. Like no human can be teased with opportunity and then year after year after year just be told, oh nope, sorry, oh nope, sorry.
Right. And so that's, you know, I guess this is a good place to jump into other topics, but it's like I was seeing it as like a bad relationship, like, and an idol for sure. So I believe like God helped me get in the door, helped me get the opportunities I did. I think I shared about this one goal I scored one time with Minnesota, but then it was like kind of clear throughout the Boston year that like God was saying, no, it was like time to move on.
Oh, wow.
But also like, don't treat this well as an idol, but don't treat this as like kids put all their emotional effort into this game, but you get to those levels and a lot of people still feel like that. And I did until I got some better viewpoints on life for sure. There's still that part of me that you know, gets very emotional about it, right? But I think what a lot of kids don't realize is that, like, when you get even probably to the WHL, I'm not as familiar with that, but it really becomes like a game, like a business.
Yeah.
45, 50-year-old men are making decisions, most of the time rational. I think I shared one of the other episodes that, like, oh, you think the NHL, all the scouts, all the managers are going to be perfect, never going to make a mistake. But, like, me and Teresa, my wife, would just joke, like, half the time we thought it was just, like, monkeys pushing buttons. Like, honestly, like, monkeys in a spaceship going, a Russian Soviet spaceship just pushing buttons, reacting to fans and whatever, right?
Yeah.
But, like, you know, they don't carry the same emotions about it. Mm. And so it's really easy for kids to get just churned up and not see it for what it is.
Right.
And it's kind of an entertainment business, but it's also like, you know, people want to win and contracts matter. And I think I got unlucky with that. I got unlucky with an agent or two. And like, I didn't understand that part of the game as well.
Right.
But yeah, no, like it's hard, but I feel like eventually God was like, I remember distinctly the game. It was like, I remember 2 years before it was like, okay, I need to make an impact tonight. And I got basically a miracle. But then at that point in Boston, a couple of games went by, I hadn't really done anything. You know, I think partly because I was down for the first part of the year, my timing was all off. And I was like, okay, I got a couple of games in. I started to be a little more comfortable, but I'm like, I need something to happen. And I went for it and I don't know, I did okay, but I was like, it's not gonna be doing it for me.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have about 20 questions in my head now. I am so wildly curious about so many things that you just said, but I think maybe the one that I kind of want to learn a little bit more from you is just kind of your relationship with faith, your relationship to God, what that looked like as a hockey player, how that kind of evolved over your career. Like, it's really interesting.
So I would say, like, you know, growing up, I was baptized and stuff, but we didn't really make it a priority. But I was like, had nothing ever really against it. And I kind of thought it was like good and a good thing, just like hockey was kind of an idol. And, you know, I've come to realize that. But, you know, you go to junior and great experience, but also kind of living for the minute. And then you go to college and it's a bit more of that, but you get into even worse things. And then I felt like I didn't really need it kind of thing. But then by the end of college, all that pressure of like, I'm so foreclosed to it. If I don't figure this out, if I don't make this, then I'll feel like a loser basically. And yeah, I just had some bad experiences in college and just felt like I was kind of like a strung out. It's not the right word to use right now. It wasn't like that. It was just like there for 4 years. And by the end, when things weren't really going well, hockey wise, and in some ways, other parts of my life, it's pretty easy to see how that would kind of start taking its toll. But then, yeah, I started pro career. Never really made use of like faith or anything like that. Didn't really understand. Maybe bought some of the weaker, if evolution is true, then it's like, then God can't be,
right,
can't exist, which is so kind of surface level crap. But anyways, but then, yeah, I don't know. I just became open to it. I had someone in my life that was from that background and I became much more open to it and was really kind of crying for help in some different ways. And then actually my uncle died. And I don't know, I went to a service. And just that service, like, I think it was a couple of days after my uncle died. Like, I'd never understood the whole hope.
Hmm.
So it was just kind of made more simple and how, like, you can't really pay for kind of what we've done in a way. And, you know, it all kind of clicked in a way. And then over the course of the next little while, you know, back in Wilkes-Barre, we had a lot of teams actually have like a Bible, I don't know what they call it, Bible study, but it's like Hockey Ministries International, I think it's called. Mm. And I would bet most NHL teams too still, I don't really know the landscape, but they still have groups that meet. It's just after practice
there
once every 2 months or once every month. And we had a good guy in Wilkes-Barre that just chatted about it. And I just kind of looked into it more and more. And then things happened in my life that like just led me that way and got reconnected with my love from high school. And and then that summer, all those guys died from suicide or, I guess, drug abuse or relapsing or, and I think it was 2011.
Yeah, it was like Bielak and...
Yeah, Rippen. And
yeah.
It was a bit...
Bugard.
Yeah, I knew his brother well.
And it was a tough year. I remember that year a lot.
And I'd gone through this kind of existential journey, this like low confidence, this foreclosure that like, what the hell am I doing? Beating myself up for this stuff and treating it as like a bad relationship, but just mm-hmm. couldn't stop. And I had a degree, bachelor of arts in psychology, majoring in psychology from school. And it just like clicked, like, this is what I'm going to do after, you know, is this kind of stuff.
No way. That I didn't realize that was the moment.
It was like, yeah, over the course of months.
Of course. Yeah. But like, yeah, that period of time.
That period of time really like, you know, I felt I got a lot better. And so it's funny, like you think of thinking as like a teenager, like something that's like almost like automatic or like mechanistic and you don't really have control of it.
Yeah.
I just really saw growth in myself being able to kind of like take more control in a way, or like I found a lot of success in just my own confidence or whatever. And so I know these concepts work and they can help. And then you add in the faith and just like actually feeling, I mean, all kinds of things, but loved and beloved and yeah, like all this kind of wrapped into that. And then all these crazy things kind of happened to me. And
like what kinds of things? Like, I heard you mention that a couple of times. Like, what were some of those like moments that were really just hard to explain?
Well, it was a period of growth when I was in Pittsburgh being concussed. And like I said, yeah. It was one of those times I got to take a step back. Even while the season's going, while getting paid. It's not bad. So I sign again with Pittsburgh and I'm, you know, in tryouts and, you know, had a great summer and given it my best. Had a pretty good camp, but they still kind of said no. They can put on waivers. And so like we had played Minnesota like 2 days before, 3 days before maybe. And one of my teammates got in a fight with one of the Minnesota guys. So then miraculously, Minnesota picks me up on waivers, which is like kind of rare for someone to get claimed on waivers. It's pretty rare.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I'm going to Wilkes-Barre. I'm ready to like work hard. Even though I was like, oh, I don't want to go back to that life in a way. Hmm. But Minnesota picks me up. And then the coach is like, you know, I chat with the GM. Then I kept chat with the new coach. And he's like, oh, one of the reasons we like, you know, I liked your scrap the other day. And so that was like one of my first conversations. So it was like, just set the tone for like a weird year in a way.
Huh.
Like, I don't want to say like, that wasn't me. You guys made a mistake.
Are you kidding me? They thought you were the guy that got into the fight?
I don't think that was the only reason they picked me up. And so like I said, the new GM in Minnesota, he had been the assistant in Pittsburgh before. That's like kind of, okay. There's like some overlap.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it was like, that was kind of strange. But anyways, I got picked up by Minnesota. All of a sudden, I'm in Western Canada 3 times before Christmas. I'm not in Wilkes-Barre playing Binghamton every other week. Which nothing against that. That was a great part of my life. But it was like, you know, I always thought for a couple of years, I was like, you know, the Lord made this possible for me so that I could live my childhood dream. But really was it what it was is so I could be with my future wife and like see her consistently a couple of times over the fall.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I shared this with you, but like my first game, it was actually my first ever game in Canada, in Ottawa. I just felt like, I don't know, like I went to school in the States and I love the States in many ways, but it's like I was really in this culture from school and still wrapped up in some of these bad choices and stuff, but like wrapped up in this group who I still love all these people, but I was really like trying to get home in a way.
Huh.
And so my first game in Canada in Ottawa was with Minnesota. And it was one of those nights. I'm like, I need something to happen. Like, I need to make an impact. Like, it had been a couple games and I'd been okay. It wasn't bad. No coach could have been like, you sucked. But, you know, they bring me in waivers and, like, they had this other junior kid they were considering. And, you know, he had 9 games to play before they had to make a decision for the year, send him back. And, yeah, the first period was tough. Like, Ottawa was good those years. Like, they were a good team.
Yeah.
But, like, battled. And then the second was a bit better. But then third period, like within 5 minutes, our line, like fourth line, scores a goal on the road to go up, I think 3-1. Matt Cassian's first point. Good guy of faith too.
Yeah.
And like, but it was like just a total, like, I've never felt more in Christ than in that moment.
Amazing.
Lining up for the faceoff as the right winger in the offensive zone on the left side, the puck went perfectly behind their center, but I jumped under, like behind him to get it, went kind of was going straight to the corner. And I'd always struggled with like quick feet out of the corner, like getting out of the corner. And it was like the best turn I ever had. And I think it was Zibanejad, who's still like a kind of a stud, right?
Yeah.
He was probably 18 or 19. And so I kind of had to step on him, but I was still not that quick of a player. So I take it to the net and basically he just like hits me. But because he hit me, I run into the goalie. There's literally like four guys in front, like chaos. This big pile. Spezza on Ottawa tries to pull the puck off the goal. Like it's like dribbling towards going in. Spezza like so good. He like going to toe drag it off the line. One of their D-men, I think it was like Mathot or something like that. Like no idea where the puck is. He's just reacting to the melee in front, turns his skate. And so when Spezza dragged it off the line, Mathot's skate accidentally knocks it back towards the line. It literally goes in by, like if you looked like on the overhead.
Yeah, yeah.
It literally, like you could see the smallest sliver of white.
Like a millimeter of white.
And it was just like, yeah, I'm not going back to not being a Christian after this. Like, yeah, it was amazing.
That's so really cool. Yeah, just like those moments where you feel like, you know, there's more than just the physical world that's like happening right now. And yeah, that's really fascinating. Yeah, it's actually something that we both have in common, that like faith is a part of our identity. I think we have very different journeys for like how we got there, and but it's the same level of importance and kind of how we live it out now. And I can also think back at the games in which I played my best were the games in which I felt that I was like connected to God. That like there was just like that presence of like, I'm not playing for the points. I'm not playing for the W. Like I'm playing for him. Mm-hmm. And just playing out of your mind, like just like inexplainably out of your mind, better than ever. Like, and sometimes it's the whole game, sometimes a period, sometimes it's like these little moments, but it's almost like a combination of like physical, but like metaphysical and spiritual flow state, like this crazy experience that, like I know you and I both have smiles on our faces, like thinking about the experiences that we've had, but it's just so hard when you're in the grind, like you were, whether it's the grind of your sport, the grind of being a student, the grind of starting a new family, to lose sight of those aspects of self that helped you get to that place, or that provide like that healthy meaning to why you invest so much time into that person, that place, that activity, the chaos, the pressure, the stress of everything. It's so easy to just shift those really important parts of your identity. And then you kind of like lose sight of why you're doing what you're doing, lose sight of like building connections with like people around you. It's like a moving target all the time to really understand what your identity is, what those important pieces are, and to kind of like live through those things. And it really seemed like at a time where the game was just being really cruel to you, that your relationship to your faith came at a time where you're able to kind of make sense of like what these experiences could be used for, right? Not that it was like destiny, that like, this is exactly what God wanted me to experience, to have all these up and down experiences. Like, no, like, you know, I think as a Christian, like he redeems all things. So in those experiences, you found that there was purpose or meaning even after sport, that this was going to tie into other important areas of your life, which, yeah, I just think is really cool.
Yeah, no, certainly I agree with all that. Like, it's like I was now a part of a bigger kind of quilt, as you were, that was like extending beyond, you know, the end date of the sport now was easier for me to handle. But I find it interesting, like kind of jumping on something you said and something I mentioned in one of the last episodes. It's like feeling like my 9-year-old self out there and just having a great time. But like I don't know. I just felt like I had like kind of more purity again. Like I just, you know, you learn life lessons when you're little and they're like important. And then you just like shove it under a mattress and then go do something else and join the culture you're a part of. But like kind of like finding that faith just let me like, I was like, no, like who I was then was like the best kind of version in a way, or like the joyfulness or like hopefulness or like happiness, you know, and I guess, yeah, now I'm an adult. So it's different. Or it's a different, you live that out different ways. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I could just be a 9-year-old and like go love the game, but in a healthier way, in a way.
Yeah.
In a much more mature way and not, not just think my identity was all about this game. Like, there's just so much more beyond that.
Yeah. I know that you were talking to me the other day about some research that you were kind of came across that talked about, actually you had alluded to it, I think even at the beginning of this episode, where you talked about with Pittsburgh or with John Hines in particular, that they were much more like task oriented in like the culture and like how they like manage the team. And I was wondering if maybe you can kind of describe that a little bit more, what that meant and kind of how that makes it easier, more difficult to kind of access your identity in those places.
Yeah, I think it's like ego involvement. It's like, does a team, does a coach want you to be, it's kind of like only tied up with the sport, only tied up with the team, instead of being like, no, that this team's here to like, we got to do these tasks, we got to do these things, but it doesn't require you to be, doesn't require you to kind of make it your only identity or even the most important identity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no team has that right in a way. No job has that right. And so it's like more like, let's build bigger people. Let's build more lifelong qualities. And so right now the tasks are football or hockey particulars, but ultimately we want people that are the most confident, that are the most creative, curious, whatever. Right. Yeah, and if you can foster that instead of like, you paid a debt to me by signing up for this team, so I own you kind of thing. Right.
Totally.
Yeah. Like I don't know, like I could just approach the, at least for my journey, I could just approach the game in a much more like, what do I have to do to succeed? What is the checklist for me to think about for warm up and to get going and let myself be in that flow kind of thing.
Totally. Yeah. Like I know one of the studies that you were talking about that talked about the distinction between ego and task, like focus kind of cultures, that like there was like an improvement, you know, like a higher ceiling potential for the players in those organizations or those cultures that were more task oriented, where it was that like, yeah, the tasks that we have in practice and in games to be able to like increase a chance of like succeeding, like those are important, but like those are tasks on a list of many other things that like are important to nurture and to focus on. Whereas and this is honestly, I still think most of elite sport is like this, where it's more like ego state, where it's like, okay, like we're here, our job is to win, our job is to produce. And it just, again, it forecloses that hyper fixated identity of like, we are only to talk about, to think about, to do the things that are directly related to the thing.
Yeah. Or it's like, ego, you know, like they say, even in the literature, that's like a lot of, you know, that ego culture, you know, there'll be rivalry between teammates and,
oh, pitting, yeah, coaches.
Yeah, pitting players against each other and like playing games in a way. And like, although, you know, having competition in a way does raise some level of performance, it's like how you do it. Are you trying to see who's a better person, who's worth more, who's more valuable, right? I think it like the language gets into there where it's like you're saying your value is based on how well you do or if you're one of the shit players or the star players, yeah, kind of thing, right?
Yeah, it just creates an entire atmosphere of like fear that it's like when I succeed, rather than feeling joy, I experience relief that the bad thing's not going to happen, that my playtime is not going to be taken away, that I'm not going to get demoted. And it's power and control of the organization to like treat people like chess pieces.
Yeah, I think the control thing is really what's on my mind. It's like if we're in an environment that demands that total ego buy-in, then I think it's natural for us as people who want to control certain parts of our environment, like, okay, the more I adopt this, like this is everything, you know, if we're always searching for control, then that's like a natural response to like, okay, how can I succeed? And this is kind of like, I guess the way to do it is to be totally in and sell other parts of myself so I can just be part of the group.
There's a quote that, I feel like I've been using this all the time with all my clients, but just, it made me think of it when you just had mentioned that the opposite of faith is not doubt, but certainty.
Mm-hmm.
Just looking at this entire conversation about, you know, even like this ego state we're talking about, like teams that like power, control, like certainty, like they want like absolutes, does not leave room at all for all those other experiences. And when you felt like you were playing your best, it was like when you were surrendering, when you had hope, when you had faith. We had more flow state access in that state. And we know that scientifically, that when we try to control our environment, we can't access flow state. That moves us in the opposite direction of those transcendent experiences. But when we have like faith and hope and curiosity and awe, and like we can have these incredible experiences either individually or collectively as a group, and that's where we thrive. Like that's where people are at their absolute best. So in sport, when you have these organizations and especially these coaches that they want to make their players feel like it's through me that you will have success. It's through me that like you will continue to progress. That decreases the performance of everyone in that space. And like that's why faith, like even from like a scientific perspective, like how I love the combination of science and faith so much is that like we know scientifically that when we surrender, that when we give up control, that when we no longer chase power, that we actually perform better. Like I just think that's so cool.
Yeah, and I think that's awesome. And I kind of what came to my mind is like how many teenagers have we seen that come in and are so anxious about controlling really their future.
Yeah.
Like a basketball kid I had was like, if I don't score that first three, basically it's like, if I don't score 45 a night,
yeah,
I have no chance against the American competition.
Yeah.
And I'll never make the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how do you play with that pressure on yourself? Right. But same with, if I don't get drafted in the WHL, yeah, my life's over. Like, and so it's not easy, but like, what do you do with that? I feel like the best answer is like, sorry, like you cannot control if you're going to be in the NHL in 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot control if you're going to make AAA next year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so for me, having that huge values kind of like landing place of faith,
mm-hmm,
like finally let me just let go.
Yeah.
Like so many kids don't have that, like they don't have that belief that they'll be fine if this doesn't work out.
Yeah.
And so what do? You try to control your environment. And what do we know? It's like, that's where avoidance comes in. That's where
anxiety.
If I just grip my stick tighter, yeah, you know,
I need to make it happen.
I need to make it happen. And it's like, I'm so worried about the result. I'm so worried how I'm going to do in batting practice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm so worried how the game's going to go. What if the scout doesn't like me? I need to be perfect. Right? It's obvious. Where does perfectionism come from, right?
Yeah, perfectionism is just, yeah, it's basically just, it's a way to feel safe. If I'm perfect, I'm good enough. If I'm perfect, I'm safe. If I'm perfect, I'll be noticed. And
yeah,
oh my God, I could talk about hours worth of content around perfectionism and how toxic that is. In short, before we leave today, perfectionism does not increase performance, ladies and gentlemen. It decreases performance. And that'll be a conversation that we can get into another time. But yeah, man, just really appreciate you like sharing some of those stories and just kind of talking about your faith. You know, it's important to be able to embrace all aspects of identity, like whatever it is, like whether it's, you know, faith-based, whether it's your gender, whether it's your sexuality, like these things that are kind of difficult to talk about in society right now, but like just embracing who you know you are and who you know you were made to be. It actually does increase your performance as that high performance competitive person. So yeah, we will continue to get into these kinds of existential, everything's connected kind of conversations. Again, totally open for you listeners to pass on suggestions, some of which we've turned into podcasts already. So feel free to dialogue, and again, like and subscribe and share to that person that you think would really benefit from this. So thank you again for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks, everyone.